And I know we've got this big thing that at the moment about ringworm, and we've all seen these horrific cases of photos because of the hygiene aspect, and that then also plays back into this kind of no proper training, and they might be taught those things in those short courses, but you can't retain that.
It's professionalism, service, and decorum, and how it's like almost now it's everybody just expects it to be a boys' club or a lads' pub. Talk, if that makes sense. It don't feel like we're dealing with a professional aspect of it.
The industry is getting really, really young.
I'm glad you said that. When I say it sounds terrible. Yeah.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here today, with a cold. we're here in Sheffield at Savills with Joth Davis. Thank you very much for hosting us here, Joth.
Welcome.
Nick Taylor from Taylor Taylor, and Andre Macedo from Tonzo, who's come in from Zurich today. Thank you very much for making the journey.
You.
Appreciate it.
Don't worry, I never get your surname right either.
Oh, is that wrong with it?
No, he got it super well.
Oh, did he? It's been getting it wrong.
No, he even asked me before. He got it super
wrong. Going
super
it,
right.
Yeah.
It only took me about 10 years to get it.
No, I appreciate it.
So, really, ever wondered about what it really takes and what to take your passion for barbering and to turn it into, a thriving career and an amazing business? Which you guys all have. And I'd like us, if we can, let's just start, I guess the beginning, the personal experience of you guys entering the industry, how you feel about training, apprenticing.
Okay.
If we start running from there and
definitely.
See where that takes us.
Yeah.
So who wants to, are you second off?
You want to go first,
I'll jump in. Yeah. We've had a conversation about my background before, so we'll not go that massive into depth into that. Otherwise, we're just kind of repeating the same thing anyway. But been in the industry for 36, nearly 37 years, and 20 of those have been involved in sort of education. So really either myself teaching apprentices or teaching in an academy or through a brand or through education for a number of different reasons. But without that, we wouldn't have the business that we've got. We've got to keep sort of training those people to keep people coming through and to keep the shops alive, because I've got 7 chairs, and I know Nick's obviously got several shops with lots of chairs, and we were having this conversation earlier that the problem we've got at the moment is finding apprentices, but for the academy, definitely for me, because I'm trying to find apprentices and then find homes for those in barbershops. Oh. That's the difficulty, because people just don't want to take them on anymore. And if people aren't taking on apprentices, then the wheels just stop turning. So it's really that's something I think I'd like to kind of go in more depth into.
But there was
I think,
a connection, because you did work with Nick's.
Yeah, so
Dan,
I mean,
one stage, well, to kind of tie this together nicely.
Well, we work next to each other, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Nick and I worked next to each other for a long time, and I worked when Nick's dad ran the business then. But I mean, look, the Taylor Taylor have been in Sheffield since 1907.
Yeah,
so four generations now.
Four
generations of barbering, and still there, and still going strong. But like we said, like we were talking earlier, Nick, it is getting more difficult to find good barbers now, and that's because they just aren't the ones coming through. And then you've got all these fast track courses where they're 8 weeks and 12 weeks. And, you know, I know you had LSB on and stuff like that. And I don't speak ill of any of those people, because whatever they're doing works for them. But that's not how I run it through my academy. And that doesn't work for me. But I just think when that's being pushed through so quickly, there's no real time spent. And that's okay if those people are willing to go in and then work in the barbershops and do what we did as grassroots, as sweeping the floor and making the drinks and things like that. But that whole thing just seems to be missed. It's literally 8, 12 weeks, bang, straight into a barbershop or straight into running their own shop, a lot of them. And then things aren't being done properly, you know, and because they haven't had the experience to sort of run with it like we have, going through all the
And watching it and seeing it as it happens day after day.
Yeah, and you learn so much. I'm not saying you learn when you're sweeping hair, and this is what I say to my apprentices now, I know it's going to feel monotonous, making people's drinks, sweeping the floor, answering phones, seeing to people coming through the door. But as you're doing that subconsciously, whether you realise or not, you are learning a lot about how the shop is run and how we treat people and how we speak to people, how we speak to our customers. And that is vital part of your apprenticeship, as well as the training and the training being provided properly. And we need, and I'm still taking on apprentices now, even though, you know, it's being made more difficult, especially by obviously what's happened recently with the budget and all that kind of stuff, and that apprenticeship wage now going up come April to £7.55. Mm. From £6 something, which is a huge jump. What does the? I made some notes on my phone. What the percentages or something that how you kind of justify this that 18% increase, whereas the national minimum wage is only 7.6 increase at the same time, and it's like how do those small barbershops cope with that were taking on apprentices because they needed to do that to keep the wheels turning so that when people naturally left and set up their own thing, having spent time served, but now they just can't, you know.
Do you think as well at the moment, it used to be you could carry certain staff in the shop even if they weren't taking particularly much money or anything like that, the business would cope with that. At the moment now, it seems like every single person who works in there has to be accountable for what they do. Otherwise you can't afford to have them there. And I think that's more so now, don't you agree? Because, but like, just, you know, going on what Joff was saying there, you know, the cutting hair is just one spoke of the wheel, you know, in the business. And a lot of these people are not necessarily learning how to talk to people correctly and deal with people in the right way. I mean, my dad was an absolute master at it. He could just talk to every single walk of life properly, and he could deal with them, and he dealt with every single walk of life. And I think that all stood us in good stead with what we do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not just about cutting your mates hair, which is what I think is happening more and more now in the younger sort of
we
side.
We touched on that earlier. And the analogy we're using is like, you know, your young barber has got his mate in and it's all chatty and jokey and talking about whatever that is they were doing, what game they're playing, what football it is, whatever they've got in common. And then when Dave comes in from accounts, who's probably maybe 10 or 15 years older, and then sits in the chair, all conversation stops and they don't really know how to converse with them.
And
you've got to be like a social chameleon, you know. And I...
comes with experience, that though, doesn't it? It comes with time.
And the good barbers are the ones who do that naturally without even meaning to do it. So, you know, the builders that sat in the chair, and even your accent changes a little bit and become a little bit more Yorkshire. And and then, you know, I might have a solicitor that comes in and then again, it all becomes sir rather than mate. And your tone of voice changes from person to person in the chair. And I don't do that deliberately, but I know I do it. And I've watched other people do that and other barbers. And I find the barbers that do that are the ones that do really well.
Absolutely.
And they're not necessarily the most technical barbers. They didn't have to be the most technically brilliant, but if they've got that in them, I've seen barbers that are far more technically brilliant than the ones that we're talking about then. And but the ones that aren't as technically brilliant, but are a better social chameleon, build up a busier, loyal clientele in a quarter of the time than the ones that are technical barbers.
No, I think that comes from experience. And I think nowadays that's what people tend to stay away from. The experience. So basically they finish courses, they want to open the barbershops or the fast track for the education, and they don't take the time. I wish back when I started, for instance, there were more barbershops that I would look around and say, I want to work here because this shop will teach me a lot, or I like this shop. And I don't think when I started there was enough. So I understood back then when some of my friends wanted to open their own. But I think nowadays, especially nowadays, there's so much, like so many barbershops there are incredible, with incredible barbers, that you can go and learn from, not just the hair that we were saying that. There's so much that you can learn, either business or social skills and everything. And I think us, younger people coming into the industry, because these guys kick my ass. Like, I've been in the game almost 10 years, and these guys been in the games 20, 30 and plus years. And I think nowadays there is a lack for coming down a little bit from the horse and actually, hey, I know where I'm, where I want to go, but let me, like, it's going to take time. It takes time. And I speak a little bit from the experience, because that's what I wanted to do when I started. I wanted to eventually open a barbershop, do education and all that jazz, but I didn't want to put the cuffs in and kind of like open the shop with no experience, not knowing anything, and kind of have this idea of I made it, when in reality I was kind of starting out. Yeah. And that's why I then, with a year experience, I reached to Joth a couple of times actually. And basically, like, what I got from Joth was that sort of like the education part, maturing a little bit, and the connections as well, the networking you can do with all those people that they open doors before you even started or something, and they can do that for you as well.
But why do you think, I agree, but why do you think our industry seems to be obsessed that we have to fast track, or so much of our industry is about fast tracking? If you look at, you know, kind of car mechanics, plumbing, electrical, all these different places that have that set of traditional apprenticeships, they're still going through the same apprenticeship. You don't find a 3-week course become a qualified engineer in 3 weeks. You go and do a full apprenticeship. You get your certificate. So if you're becoming an electrician, you turn up with certificate. Is it because we're not certified? Is it because companies don't want to take on apprentices? Why do you think there seems to be so many young people that want to get into it. So many people are signing up for these courses. And then they must be jumping off the bridge halfway across, because they're not making it through into being successful barbers.
Mm. I think the regulation thing has definitely got something to do with it. You know, we've all been shouting about that for a long time and are continuing to shout about it. Whether anything ever gets done about that remains to be seen. In my opinion, I don't think it ever will. You know, I know from someone that did the whole number 10 thing and went down there and speaking involved with that barber council and everything. And the word they got back sort of off the record was, well, nobody's dying, are they? Mm-hmm. You know, and I know we've got this big thing that at the moment about the ringworm, and we've all seen these horrific cases of photos that where that's been sort of going around because of the hygiene aspect, and that then also plays back into this kind of no proper training, and the courses are so fast you can't possibly learn and they might be taught those things in those short courses, but you can't retain that when there's so much information to retain in an 8-week period. All you're able to do at the end of that is basically do like a basic haircut. And you it needs to be taught over a longer time so it can be repeated. You repeatedly need to talk about hygiene. You repeatedly need to go through scissor over comb. You repeatedly need to go through long hair over a 12 to 18 month period. And you can't do that in 8 weeks, 12 weeks. There's no way you can have seen all the hair types that you need to deal with. And even after 12 months, like, the girl who's my apprentice at the moment, Katie, who's just coming towards the end of that now, and she's just coming towards the end of her 12 months, and she can proficiently do sort of all the haircuts she needs to do, long, short, fading, all the rest of it, but I'm still checking all of the haircuts because I know there's going to be something she's not come across, a hair type, a growth pattern, something, you know, and she still might need to ask for advice. And that's 12 months later. So in 12 weeks, how can that possibly happen? It can't. I'm not saying that you know, those courses are wrong for whatever reason. I'm just saying it doesn't seem to be doing the industry.
I mean, I've had a conversation with many, but they're, even if you see them as a start point, that these guys are turning up, they've done 100 haircuts, say, over a 12-week period. It's the start point.
Yes.
And you know, I think if we take an imaginary perfect world, if I had someone who turned up who's done 100 haircuts and still passionate, still excited, has committed 6, 7 grand, £1,000 to do it, or whatever it's cost him, and still wants to do it, surely that's a reason for me to want to take them on and continue the training.
I have done that. Yeah, I have done that with people from LSB. I've had a couple of people where they've gone through that course and I've gone, okay, well, you've not quite got what you need yet, but there's some extra training that needs to be provided. And I've gone, if you, you know, we'll work with me, we'll get you to where you need to be. And I do like a month's worth of intensive training with them. And then at that point, you know, if they've shown the right aptitude and they've worked with me to get where they need to go, then I take them on. And then it's like, then I continue to work with them and checking their haircuts. But every time that's happened, and that's two or three occasions, they've given up. They just feel completely out of the depth because I am so particular about the work that goes out in the shop. I think, I don't know whether it's just, they just think, oh my God, he's nitpicking, or I'm never going to be that good enough. And I've gone, no, we will get you there. You're getting there. They just don't want to continue to put that level of work in because they've not been used to that level of the same thing when they've been taught initially. There's a lot of things that have just sort of been let go a little bit. And I'm not saying that's the same for everyone that's gone through those courses, but that's what I've experienced.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Have you worked with many? You take on any?
Yeah, I think I've done two or three as well. But I mean, we've had one successful one from that, definitely. Where again, though, when he came, he was raw, but he was incredibly passionate about it, and you could see straight away. And he jumped on board straight away. He wanted to learn, and he turned out to be a quality barber, and I think, you know, he's gone on to open his own shop now, and
they can work. So
there is some success stories without a doubt.
Yeah, there was my
and
case.
Andre,
actually,
you were talking before about men spire as well, and obviously Josh has that whole principle that they will move them from courses into the shops, presumably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but to pick up on Nick, that was exactly my case, because I came to Joth, so I started in 2015, and I had this fascination back then with the old school, of course, and it was Skorum and it was Savills, and for me Savills was the place because it was a little bit more broader in terms of styles, and I always wanted to work at Savills. I remember I was doing a little private thing, a little third floor of a place in my hometown, and the first frame I put on the wall was actually Savills logo. Not knowing that eventually I would be working there, but I put it there with kind of like this idea of I would love to. And then he was looking for an apprentice a year later, and I sent a message to apprentice, and I was cutting for a year. But it was the idea of I want to work in this place because I want to grow here. Like they can teach me something that I would never get anywhere else. And then because it was apprentice, low pay and stuff like that, at least for the standards of me moving countries and stuff like that, I took too much time, and they found somebody. Then after a few months, they were looking for a barber, and I was like, hey, still the same person, but I am a barber. I know I applied for apprentice, but I would love to work in the shop, anything. I just want a position. And they didn't answer me to that. I don't know, they were frightened or whatever. And then came about Barber Connect. They were looking for models. And I basically sent a message for model. Hey, you didn't want me as an apprentice. you didn't want me as a barber.
That's a bit of axe grinding. Yeah,
kind of like pushing through. It's like, but I would love to be a model, at least give me the chance to be a model. So he was like, hey, show me your hair, send a picture. He was like, it's exactly what we're looking for. Come by the booth. And when I came by the booth, it was like instant connection. We kind of connected straight away, got kind of like good friends from the get-go. And it was like me saying, listen, I don't know if I know much. I clearly probably don't. But I'm really like balls deep, excuse the expression, to push through, to learn. If you give me the chance, I just need a chance. And it turned out that he gave me the chance, and it was an incredible year and a half at Savills. And everything that I'm doing now, I keep saying this when I give workshops and everything, there is nobody that is self-made. I don't believe in this self-made kind of thing. And you can do a lot for yourself if you connect with the people and if you give yourself time. Like it took me like now almost 10 years to be working with the brands I'm working with and everything. And most of it, or a lot of it, comes from people like Joth and people that I met along the way to give myself time. Like, it will come, but I need to do this first and I need to learn this first, because it's not just about the haircut. And it takes time, and knowledge is you got to put it into practice. And as Joth said, you got to put it into practice multiple times. And that takes a lot of, it's a big time frame. You can't just...
It does always seem to come down to the patience.
Yes.
Of whether it's the patience of the barbershop owner to be patient enough to get them there, and the willing apprentice to be willing to
put the work in and
realize that there's a time factor. And we seem to have been quite quick to dismiss so much of our industry that it can be condensed into 12 weeks of haircuts, as if that's it. These guys are going off. They're opening up some, God knows what they're doing, but they're opening up shops straight away.
My worry is that, you know, when you look at it at the bigger picture, we used to be a very, from a general public side, we used to be a very well-respected industry. And I don't think we are.
No.
At the moment.
No.
And that is very unfortunate. Mm. And that is down to, you know, maybe the regulation, the amount of poor quality that is out there, standards, the hygiene, things like that. And we need to get that respect back quickly, I think, for this industry to move forward.
I was amazed. I mean, we had Luke Dolan in, and he was just saying, you know, really, you know, if you're paying VAT and with everything else, you know, you're looking at a 40, 50, 60 quid haircut. And we put up on the Insta a little poll. 15, 20 quid one. That was it.
Yeah,
and the abuse that came through, that it, you know, the audacity. Someone actually said, what do you think gives barbers the right to earn that sort of money? And you kind of go, no, I don't know if that's, yeah, that, and that possibly is barbers themselves answering
but
these.
But then, you know, you could flip it into any industry and kind of go, because when if someone ever sort of says to me about the pricing and, oh, you're so expensive, and I go pay 20 quid down the road, or I pay 10 quid down the road, or whatever the cheaper price is at that point. And it doesn't happen very often, but it has happened over time. And I don't go, oh, well, you're welcome to just sort of go down the road. And I explain to them in depth why we charge what we charge. I mean, one of the reasons is because we're in this building here, you know, we're in S1 postcode, we're in Sheffield City Centre. I've got a, you know, two floor, three room that wasn't cheap. There was nothing in here when we moved in, just literally bare brick and no flooring. So everything, water, electric, all these services had to go in, all that. And I would say to the customer, well, look, we charge what we charge because of where we are in the city centre. We have rent and rates that are obviously a lot higher, so we have to charge accordingly in order to probably make the same amount of profit that your barber down your local road is charging 20 quid for or 10 quid for, and making the same actual margin in terms of maybe where their rent and rates are. But then you kind of go, well, if you go to a solicitor, you can go to a solicitor and you can get one for 250 grand an hour and you can get one for 5 grand an hour. Why is the 5 grand one more expensive than the 250 quid one? I could tell you why. It's probably because he's much older, he's got more experience, he's been in the game longer, he's got a bigger clientele, he's done more networking with more people, so he's got bigger accounts. Well, isn't that the same thing for us? You and I have been in the industry, and Nick as well, in, you know, for almost four decades, we've been doing it a long time. You know, if someone comes through the door, I don't imagine there's a particular haircut or anything that ever phases you anymore. You know exactly what to do with it. Yeah. Because you're experienced. So does that not mean if you've got that experience, then you should charge more? I mean, hairdressers, and you obviously own salons as well yourself, don't you, Anthony, have been doing this tiered pricing structure for years, but you very, very rarely see that in a barbershop.
We don't get, we don't seem to.
Well, we do that here. We do that here.
In Portugal and in Zurich? Is it a UK thing?
As in terms of pricing
and
like different
and
tiers
the low and, quality of pricing.
Yeah, I think to be honest, because I worked in my country, Portugal, and I worked in England and now in Switzerland, and I feel there's the same problems everywhere.
It is.
I wouldn't even say as problems. I've talked about this before, which is in some cases, like, I used to be pissed off with the low budget barbershops. I used to think like. the client doesn't understand what I have to offer and how that would kind of make me angry to some extent. But as time goes by, I understand that they have clients that basically are not my clients, and that's okay. So they do something that I don't want to do, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And then also like justifying the price to the customer. Sometimes I did this before, and basically I don't think it's worth it because, again, I'm going to explain to somebody that doesn't want to pay my price. So he's not my client. So there is like the different different prices. So you get the low budget one, the mid range, and then the higher ones. And I think it's the same everywhere. I do feel like picking on the respect of the industry, Nick was saying, I feel that there's a little bit of a different ball game. Maybe it's connected to price. Sometimes like the respect is lacking because the price is low, and then the shop kind of like going to McDonald's, you're not gonna argue on the burger because it's a McDonald's. So basically, it gives the freedom sometimes for barbers to behave a certain way, and then the price justifies, and nobody's gonna complain.
Is it price, or is it more just about the fact that we're saying standards are slipping, hygiene, that there isn't the kind of, I don't know. I mean, the word decorum's floating around my head, and I don't think that's the right word.
Standards. I think
you've got 100 years of history floating around with you.
There's some incredible barbers out there. And I mean, in Sheffield, we've got some amazing barbers right across the city now, some great shops. It's not the standards actually in haircutting specifically I'm worried about. I'm worried, but it's professionalism, service, and decorum, and how everyone acts. It's like almost now, it's like everybody just expects it to be a boys' club or a lad's sort of pub talk, if that makes sense. It don't feel like we're dealing with a professional aspect of it. I think we're losing that if we're not kept. We certainly are not, because and I know Joth isn't, but that's been a big part of our heritage. We've always dealt with every type of person, and over that 100 years, we've had to evolve throughout each decade and change the way we do things. Mm. Because if we don't, we wouldn't have been here still. Yeah. There's no way we're here because, you know, we've had to do that, and new team of
and
members
that,
of staff
and
come
that
in.
All comes from time served again. It's 100 years of time served within your business and your family business.
It's not just being built up. It's happened, you know, because we've had, I mean, my dad and it had to do it with his dad. And he evolved it that way. And then I had to sort of say to me, Dad, look, Dad, we need to change that. Come on, we can't do it like that anymore. Well, it's always worked like that. I'm not changing that, you know. We're changing it. We've got to slightly adapt this way. And you do it. And that's the way it all moves forward. Mm. And you know, you pick up things off different people and you try, well, let's try that in this shop. And, you know, and some work, some done, doesn't it?
But I think finding yourself as a barber, deciding and discovering who you're going to be, who your clients are, certainly was part of my apprenticeship. The journey that I spent qualifying really was a lot of, you know, I found some barbers and some hairdressers that I felt I liked what they were doing. So I kind of lent a little bit more that way. And then there were people whose attitudes and the way they spoke to customers I really liked. There were the guys that just got massive tips. I was like, right, I'm doing that. And I was kind of taking all these bits from each other to kind of create who the barber, who the hairdresser I am, what I'm going to be doing and how I'm going to approach it. I couldn't have done that in a short term, but there's that move between student and fully fledged. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think every conversation I've had, including this one, seems to be that space isn't being filled. The guys that are coming into it don't know how to get
the industry
from novice, how they grow.
Yeah. The industry is getting really, really young, I think, as well. I don't know. I don't know if...
I'm glad you said that. When I say it, it sounds terrible. Yeah.
No. But in the sense of, and you guys can tell me, because I've been here 10 years and you guys a lot more. But I think we have... a lot of young people coming into the industry that maybe they would get into the industry within the structure of your business, which was the father, the apprentice, which has a little bit more like a guide of somebody that is experienced, and it's bringing the person up. And nowadays, with the fast courses and everything, and all the popularity of barbering, plus the young generation, plus society, because I do feel society is instant gratification. So all this combination, I think if we don't have also good leaders in the industry, because most of the people, like, I think it comes down, or it waters down from what the big names are doing. And I think the big names have a responsibility to kind of guide in the best way. And for you guys was in the apprentice kind of thing. And nowadays, because the industry changes and times change, is social media. And I feel that social media is a way, it's not an apprenticeship, but it's a way to guide people to a better place. And you do that by setting an example. So if you have a flashy guy that just does that kind of thing and promotes X, Y, Z, then that is what's going to come out for the young guys as well, because they look at you as a person to follow.
I think you do that really well through your social media channels as well, because I don't know if you've seen what Andre does through his social media, because he doesn't do really any hair cutting or any. It's just all really talking about what he knows and what, you know, what he's learned over the last 10 years and how he thinks that, you know, that things should be dealt with. And I know you've said this in one of your feeds, and I think Johnny said something as well, where there's a lot of barbers out there now that just kind of think that the customer's the problem, and as soon as the customer's gone, there's all this complaining about the customer and all this, that and the other, and they're just kind of not realizing, like, you know, without these guys coming through the door, there's no shop, and without the shop, there's no job. And then there's no, 100%. You know, you've got to start, you know, treating your customers, you know, in the right way, you know, whether that's someone you get in with or not, you treat them all the same. You kill them all with kindness, and it's all sir, please, thank you.
Yeah, I still find the videos of mocking client, I do find it quite hard to watch.
And
by all means, most of my clients have become really good friends of mine.
Yeah, they pay proper money, and
I look forward to seeing them in the next month. And if they're not in the following month and they miss me, I'm like, what happened? What's going on?
You notice when your client's not been in that 4 weeks, it's coming later.
I still love it when I get a new client. I mean, I must admit, when I tend to get a new client these days, it tends to be a guy who's having a problem. I tend to find the guys that are losing their hair or struggling with it, or they've got that thick, wiry hair that no one seems to be able to cut, or they're fed up. They now feel they're too old, so it can't just be clippered. And unless it's down to a number one, I always have guys whose hair is difficult, who have moved into a kind of CEO or a bigger part of their life, that they're much more aware of their look. Mm. And those are the guys I get. And I'm really respectful to them. They're really respectful of me. I mean, you know, it's...
And so you should be there. They pay your wages.
Of perspective. Like, if you would joke with your client behind the chair, like a joke that you would say, then I think it's okay if you sometimes use that in the social media environment, a joke. But I think sometimes it gets a little bit stretched. Mm. And it's the same of what we were talking about when it goes to the flashy thing and everything. Because I do feel that there's still room for one thing is the industry, one thing is the craft. And the craft is not, I'm an artist. The craft is service.
Yeah.
And that was barbering like 10 years, 20 years, 100 years ago. And I feel that sometimes it gets... The industry kind of outshines the craft, and then you think that the line gets blurred out, and then you bring that to the shop, and I don't think that's the way to go.
I mean, there's discussions and the things that we're talking about now and you've been talking about in your podcast. I mean, you go back when your, you know, when granddad was in the shop, you know, and cutting hair in the blackout and all that kind of stuff. This conversation we're having now wouldn't even be a thing.
No.
Everyone got treated like kings, you know, and that's been passed down to your dad and then passed down to you. And, and although you've not had the opportunity to work in loads of different shops that are not your own, you've still got all that service element in spades because of time served. And I've worked in lots of different shops. I worked for Nick's dad and I've worked in loads of different barber shops and salons as well, because I was a hairdresser before I was a barber. And when I was doing my apprentice, the manager that we had down. I mean, I've tried to find a year say, so I wish I could find her and online somewhere and say thanks, because I hated her when I was an apprentice. She was horrible, but she ruled the roost, because this was like, remember the House of Fraser store?
Yeah.
And it was on a third, the House of Fraser store in Sheffield. And they had one on the second, third floor. 40 staff. Six first-year juniors, 6 second-year juniors, 3 junior stylists. So there was like 2 juniors to every 1 stylist. So it was a big salon running, and she'd run it like ruthlessly, you know, and I'm like one-handed sweeping up, and she's coming over, no, this is how you do it. And I'm like, I'm going out, you're showing me how to sweep up. And then years later, you find your apprentice doing exactly is doing the one-handed sweep, and you go, like, move, like, quick. But, you know, I was just 15, 16-year-old. It's not, what did I know? I didn't know nothing. Yeah. She'd had time served in the industry. She knew what needed to be done. She knew how to run that salon, and she ran it ruthlessly. And she was brilliant, because it was successful. It was really good. And that was part of the SNL group, which was the Salgamon and Lats, which went on to have something like 60, 70,000 salons worldwide, that group. Whoa. You know, it became Regis and Alan Paul and all those things. And I went back to work for them years later. But having worked there as an apprentice and done all that toothbrush and the grout and all the tiles in the back, and we see videos now on social media joking about it, but we did do that, you know. And then gone on to work, look for loads of different places, and then gone, that guy, I love the way he did that. And if I ever own my own shop, I want it to do that sort of thing. And you know, when I worked for Nick's dad and alongside Nick, and you know, I would like to take that and do that with it. And so you find these things along the way to go in, and then you open up your own shop, and then, you know. Then,
well, I love it. That's exactly what Andre's doing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Trying to get everyone else to do it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And so, but it all goes back again to sort of time served. And if I hadn't had working in all those different places, I wouldn't have the things that I had.
Sounds daft, though. It's not rocket science, is it, really? When we think about it. We, you know, we're here to make people feel
with
a lot great.
You know. Pass that on. Do you feel there's a big change in the way you apprentice to compared to how you were apprentice?
Well, the problem is they're that sensitive now. Everyone is so much more sensitive than they used to be. You've got to be careful what you say to them. So you can't talk like what we used to. If you do, you probably get the parents on the phone and all sorts. So you've got to be a little bit more careful. But I'm not, you know.
I don't know I ever enjoyed the way I was spoken to. I don't, you know. So
no,
I do
we're
think,
not in Gordon Ramsay's kitchen, are we?
You must have had the same sort of apprenticeship.
My staff are very respectful of me, and I'm very fair and I'm very honest with them. We've certainly changed our apprenticeship so that it's much faster than it was. It's still, you know, 15 months. Because I don't believe you can do it. But after 15 months, you know, they can work alongside me, and I'm really proud of them rather than terrified of them.
I think our generation...
That's something we needed to make it faster and more bite-sized and more interesting and tastier for them. Yeah. I spent a lot of my apprenticeship being wasted. You know, not in a good way.
Well, a lot of them are still like that, but I think our generation is probably a lot softer than. I mean, my dad was soft. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, he was.
But my uncle wasn't, and a lot of my brother's mentor, ex-boss, was harsh. He didn't take any crap at all. So, but I don't think it's as much like that nowadays. I think sometimes we're probably a lot more careful, maybe a bit nervous about putting our foot down.
Well,
you've got to
be really careful, because everything is so litigious now, isn't it? So, you know, you say the wrong thing and someone goes, and next thing you're in small claims court or something. And
I remember when I worked, you're saying about the woman that terrorised you and taught you. I was taught by a fantastic guy called Ian Dobson, who, again, I've lost touch with. I'd love to find him. I'd love to get you on the podcast, Ian. And he said to me a brilliant thing. He always said, you know, I think it's really important that you take some of what you've learned that you liked and take it with you, and some of the stuff that you didn't like, and don't do it to somebody else.
Yes,
absolutely.
And I think there's a big bit of our apprenticeships that were that. And I try really, really hard that the bits that I really didn't like, I don't pass on.
But it's really about that, isn't it? Where it's like a rocket. You set the rocket up And as it goes to the space, it loses bits of the rocket, right?
Yeah.
And I think the experience is about that. You lose the bits you don't want or the bits you don't like. Then you can fly away into space, and then you're there doing your own thing.
Oh, I know. I know. I was giving the old analogy, but yeah, that's fantastic. But
I think it is. That's why we need time. We lose those things, yeah. The bad habits and the stuff. We get humbled as well.
Yeah, I just think, like I said, it's not rocket science, this. But what my grind is that how many times we've seen, like, we're interviewing people. Get the basics right first. Let's get the basics. Keep it simple. We don't need to get too technical. We don't need to go over the top of things. Let's just get it basic, get that right, and then we move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, sometimes they're just not right from the word go, are they?
Well, and you know, social media is partly to blame for that as well, because they'll go away and see all these things and go, I want to do. And they look at these like immaculate fades, and then they're trying to sort of emulate that and trying to run before they can walk, and then you kind of rein them in a little
say?
Bit.
What do you say?
And then they show you what they've actually seen, and you kind of go, that's actually not real. That's been photoshopped. It's been sprayed with whatever, and with these little cards, and they spray on the sides and make all the little detail. And if that's what the client wants, and I know there are a lot of barbershops that do that well, but it's not for me, you know. But also, for someone who doesn't have the experience to look at that and know what that is, they look at it and go, why can't my face look like that? Why can't I get it to look like that? Because it's just, it's fake, and it's showing the wrong thing, you know.
But as we start drawing to the end of part one, I just want to run through, because I'm very lucky to have three proper educators here, and I'm interested in the point of when you made that move from just being a barber to being an educator. And what was it? And maybe it's more relevant to you that it's been a newer thing for yourself. But there must be a point where you kind of go, actually, and you've worked with people around you who don't teach, who are great barbers, but teaching isn't something for them.
It's not for everyone. Yeah.
When did you discover, or for people, we're seeing a lot of young guys coming out into education, what is it you think you had that made you want to pass it on, want to teach?
Well, for me, I think obviously with having a business and trying to grow our business and expand at that point, I was training our team. We got apprentices coming up, and at that point, I could cut hair well. I've worked alongside great barbers like Joth and others as well, and we all could cut hair, but we didn't really know how to tell people what we were doing. We'd do it, but there wasn't an explanation for it particular. And about 20 odd years ago, when American Crew came over to the UK, and a bit longer than that actually, and they wanted to start an education team over in the UK. They'd already started in America and Australia, and they wanted to expand it over to the UK. And I was asked by my rep at the point of view, would I be interested in getting involved? And I was, and I was going down to London to the Sykes Academy in Covent Garden, and which is where I met Ian Harold for the first time all those years ago. And then I thought, what am I going to learn here? You know, they wanted me to do this 3-day method course, and I did it, and I was blown away by it. And I just loved the whole, I was talking about this earlier with you, the structure of it. The first time that I'd come across an actual structure and a method and a technical program of how to cut men's hair properly.
The amount of people that bring American Crew, that training. What's it called now? Is it called Ace One?
It's Ace,
Ace One, Ace, Two and Three?
Ace One, Two or Three, yeah.
Originally just men's method.
It was, yeah, the method.
Amazing.
Yeah. But there's still the core of it,
the
still exactly the same.
Still say that. Exactly that.
And I did that. And, and from there I got involved to become American Crew educator in the UK. And then I worked myself up and became part of the global education team, which luckily, and you know, I feel very privileged to have been able to travel all around the world teaching. My strong point is classroom. I love being in a classroom environment, teaching one-on-one. You can put me on stage, and I'll be on stage and I can do it. I don't think that's as enjoyable these days as what everyone thinks it is, but I would rather be hands-on in a classroom teaching method. And because I've got an answer for every single part of it, because I know it inside out.
Why is that?
Because I've been drilled into it.
Yeah,
and I practiced it.
Served him.
I'm going to finish with you, Andre. What about yourself? What made you want to make that move into? Why is education important to you?
Mine is easy. So basically, when I started, I wanted to be around the greats and be working with the biggest brands, so I can then go back to my younger self and then tell it's not just about hair. So basically, I wanted to get better, so then I can teach other people about stuff that is not just the hair. It's just like the soft skills and all that jazz. And I think Denzel Washington says, first you learn, then you earn, and then you return. And I think the return part comes when people start asking. So I had this idea of what I wanted to do. But then when people start asking a little bit, and this in your case was the shop needed also, and you bring apprentices and everything. In my case was when people started asking for education. Then I realized that I need to sit down and structure something so I can give back. And that's what I'm doing now.
You wouldn't have thought Denzel could have got any cooler, could you?
He is now.
What about yourself?
Well, so mine was, I just left actually working for alongside Nick for Nick's dad and gone back to work for the, which then became the Regis Group, Alan Paul, and worked in their salon as a barber. And and I was basically teaching the apprentices because they were teaching them hairdressing and I was teaching them the barbering aspect and I quite like that. And then it was also around the time when American Crew first came in, so it was probably, 30 years ago. Mm. And Regis were all about selling the product, sell the product. Percentages, you really, really hard sell. And so I was selling shitloads of American Crew. And then they did all these sort of prize things, didn't they? If you sell so much, you get this and get that and get this and get that and all the rest of it. And I loved their branding. I loved the photography because there was nothing like that. It was the first sort of proper men's range and all the stuff that could go with it to back it up. And so I wrote a letter to American Crew and I took some photographs of whatever. I mean, look back at them now, they're horrendous. You know, the photos you take with you have to go and get them printed out back in the day, these black and white things. Thought I was really good checking them all at these different angles and sent them all off. Then is there some way I can get involved? And they came back to me and said, well, yeah, we're looking for educators in the UK and we're looking for someone. So they then put me in touch with the distributor for our area, who I think was then based like Matlock somewhere. He was based. I can't remember his name. And so I did an education role for them, going in salons, doing that. Obviously, first, like Nick did, went down with one of the all-stars, did the men's men. He was teaching in a salon, so I went down to, I drove all the way down to King's Lynn to watch him teach that to somebody else who they were obviously selling the product and promoting that. And then I went with him on another one somewhere else, and then obviously went off and did that by myself. So sat in my little Fiesta with my road map, because no sat nav and all that kind of stuff, trying to find your way up and down the country. So I was doing that like on my day off, and then through that then got one of the local distributors who's like the wholesalers, one of the wholesalers in Birmingham, that I was doing some of the American Crew stuff from there, and said, we want somebody else to do this with Wall products. And then Wall got in touch with me, and then I started doing some stuff with Wall as well. So, and then I was kind of, working then like Sundays and my day off, and then working full time. So working 7 days a week, but doing that for kind of extra money. And
it was all on days off. That's what
it
had to
be.
Yeah,
it was all days off.
It was
full on. And then I was kind of getting paid at the end of the month and going, I'm working 7 days a week for like probably about 1,200 quid a month, and just kind of going, there's got to be something more. But was still really enjoying the education thing. And then I had a rock climbing accident, pulled my shoulder out of my socket, and that stopped everything. So then I handed all that American Crew over to someone else. It was Shane, if you remember Shane.
Yeah.
And he came and took my where I was working for at Alan Paul.
And then
I went into another industry for yeah. which is a whole other story. But then when I came back into it years later, and then again running my own barbershop and then having my own apprentices, got back into that again and then started getting into the photography and all that kind of stuff. And then Savile's got this kind of name for itself for winning a few things. And then Simon Shaw got in touch, and then I was back in it. And then I was, you know, traveling all around the world, kind of doing that.
Do you know what, though, from owning your own business, and it's a massive motivational, inspirational thing to be able to do a bit of this alongside running your own business.
Interesting, though, this is where the passion levels have all kicked in. Every one of you are kind of loving your training, it gets you at the core, love teaching. Great first part, guys. I'm going to steal Denzel's final words just to say, learn, earn, return. I think that's exactly what everyone should do. I hope you come back for part two. Many thanks.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.